This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me tonight are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everyone.
Stephen Lockeridge.
Hello.
And our special guest is Matt Poirier. I've wrecked your name.
No, you got it. You're good. Yeah. Close. Yeah, it's good.
Yep. So Matt is joining us from across the pond. He is a podcaster himself of the DTV Connoisseur. And I imagine with a title like that, Matt, you must have a similar ethos to us. Can you give us a bit of a rundown what you get up to on your podcast?
Yeah, for sure. So I started with the site in 07. And the reason why I call it the DTV Connoisseur, I wanted to have this like sort of this like, we have this, you know, the show here in the US, the Masterpiece Theater, where they've got Alistair Cook from England, who would like host like BBC productions here. Yeah. And I always thought it would be this kind of funny idea of me being Alistair Cook, but instead of it like being like a, you know, a 9-part series on Nicholas Nickleby or something, it's me watching a Dolph Lundgren film, you know, in the smoking jacket and everything. And so that was really what it was. And it was just kind of like originally supposed to just be all DTV stuff, which I think is similar to what you guys do, where it's just every genre. But what's kind of happened over time is that the sort of the reaction that I was getting from people out there that were, you know, reading the blog and then listening to the podcast is that it seemed like action was the big one. And so it sort of by default, it's been more action. But, you know, I still technically hold on to this idea that it's all elements of DTV. And it's just sort of that idea of growing up, it was always fun to watch on TV or go to the video store and get these films that weren't in the theater and sort of have them kind of be your own thing or, you know, with a small group of people. And I feel like there's that's still that vibe of it, of just like, you know, not everybody watches these movies, but it's kind of fun that we all enjoy them together.
You find that sort of films that go straight to DTV is sort of taking more of a risk in their sort of, you know, what they're actually presenting sort of story-wise?
Yeah, sometimes they can take more of a risk. And also, too, it's like they have more challenges too. So it's almost like if a DTV film comes off well, it considering all the things at its disposal that, you know, and I mean, how many big budget films do you watch that aren't good? I mean, my wife and I watched You've Got Mail last night, and that one had all kinds of problems with it, but it's like, well, you know, everybody in the film that made the film were successful, so nobody told them to change anything. Whereas with DTV, it's more like the opposite way around. Like somebody could be really good, but like, you know, the producer, the studio, everybody's telling them to cut things out, edit things, change things. And so It always feels like when you get something really good, there's something authentic about it, I think.
I think also sort of having a sort of limited budget is sort of the mother of invention as well, isn't it? You know, it's sort of they're having to sort of come up with more innovative ways of actually sort of doing stuff.
Yeah, and that's always fun too, to hear the kind of behind the scenes. And I think, you know, I went into it more of like this kind of snarky thing where it's like, I'm just going to make fun of these movies with my friends. And then, you know, when the directors and the cast members and whatnot were replying to the reviews, and I realized like, oh, they actually, you know, there are people out there that are involved with making these films, suddenly my mindset changed a little bit. And then it was more about getting the word out and celebrating these films more and the achievements that they made. So sometimes I'll go back to some of my old reviews and be like, boy, I can't believe I said that. That was really mean of me to say, or you know, it's the way I treated that film. And now it's more like, you know, if something goes wrong in the film, it's like, okay, try to look at what they did wrong and maybe what they could have fixed. But then also, you know, yeah, it's like you said, you kind of, when you see them achieve things with those limited means, it's always kind of cool. I mean, especially those 90s PM Entertainment film where you saw like the kind of the action, the way that they pulled off action with such a small budget. It's always kind of exciting to see how they do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite stories was on the set of The Terminator, where they had this thing where Arnold was on top of the bonnet of this car, sort of punching a windshield as it was driving backwards. And they actually realized that that's a very dangerous stunt. So what they did, they had the car stationary, and then because the backdrop was like a brick wall, they just moved the wall so it looked like the car was moving, which is brilliant. You know, it's just really, really simple. And you think, you know, you'd never have known if you hadn't actually been told that, which is great.
Yeah. It's always kind of fun to hear those kinds of things, for sure.
Right, so in this particular episode, we are looking at the recent works of Michael Jai White, someone who is a stalwart of DTV and mainstream cinema as well. Let's not forget he was in The Dark Knight, yeah, the second one, wasn't it? Among others, of course, Spawn and various
Exit Wounds.
Exit Wounds, of course, yeah, with old Mr. Seagal. someone he holds in high regard, I'm told. So tonight we're going to be looking at Welcome to Sudden Death. Then we're going to move on to Take Back. And then we've got A Short Shot, which is Three Bullets. And then we're going to wind up with an absolute stone-cold classic, Blood and Bone. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first film, then, is Welcome to Sudden Death. Michael Jai White plays Jesse, a security guard at a basketball arena. He's recently returned from a special ops tour in Afghanistan and is trying to reconnect with his young children. He brings them to work one day to watch the opening game. However, he's chosen the worst day to do it, as a team of mercenaries have taken the local mayor, the governor, and the new team manager hostage. Did I say manager? I meant owner. Anyway, Matt, kick us off, mate. How did you find this film?
I wanted to like it. I particularly like the 80-minute running time. That's always a good sign for me. But yeah, it just, there were too many sort of fatal flaws that just made it so I couldn't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have trouble with kids in movies. I think that's the first thing. And, you know, nothing kills an end fight scene between the hero and the main baddie than the child yelling daddy every few minutes. So that was a tough part. Also, the Gary Owens character, the kind of the goofy
comic relief.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If he doesn't get good material, which he actually, I think he was pretty good in Undercover Brother too. So I don't want to be blaming him and calling him unfunny or something like that. Maybe it was just the material, but there were a lot of those little things that just added up to, you know, and it's important because I think Michael Jai White, even his fight scenes, I felt like they were a little bit over edited for what they should have been, you know, but I don't think I don't want to say I hated this movie, but it just didn't completely work for me.
It certainly has a few issues. Steve, how did you get on with this one?
Yeah, I agree with Matt, to be fair with you. Annoying kids, annoying comic relief. I didn't, even the fight scenes, I didn't think were up to much in this one, to be fair. It seemed very, like, the editing was very stilted, you know, especially like the fight in the locker room.
Yeah,
that it just didn't benefit me. And also, I thought the bad guy as well was terrible. I've had more scary shits than him, to be fair. He was just absolutely pathetic. It didn't gel. I mean, the thing that got me, I didn't normally. I'll go into these films blind. I won't look at anything or anything like that. And I'm about 20 minutes in, I'm thinking, well, this is just a rip-off of Sudden Death. Not realizing it's played as a sequel because it's on the poster, which I just didn't grasp. And then it all clicked into place and, okay, fair enough. But yeah, it's okay. It's not groundbreaking. Obviously, you know, you've got your budgetary issues there. And even the kids. The kids are annoying. Just didn't work. Didn't work at all.
Rich, what did you make of this? And how do you think it compares to the Jean-Claude Van Damme version?
Yeah. So what we've got here is a film that's much, much cheaper. What they've done is, it's let's take Sudden Death and let's make it like an episode of Home Improvement or whatever other American sitcom. Why is it shot like a sitcom? I just don't understand it. It's got that really weird, not just televisual, but, you know, like it's setting up for gags or you know, the sets, you know, the camera doesn't move that much in certain scenes. And, you know, there's very particular sets that they use, and they just, and the locker room fight scene is quite a good example. It's just like, that looks like, you know, like you're watching Coach or something. I don't know. It's just felt really weird to me. So that gives the film a very unusual feel. And in terms of, you know, a sequel or remake. They're obviously undecided whether to market this as one or the other. So you can kind of take your pick, but it's basically a remake, and they've just changed a couple of the features around. But the problem is we've already had a really good remake of Sudden Death called Final Score.
Yes.
It just wasn't official. So this pales in comparison. And that's a real shame considering, you know, Michael Jai White is a fantastic lead. You know, he's always charismatic in everything he does. His fight action in this is pretty good, I thought. He's working with Larnell Stovall again.
Yep.
And, you know, he's doing some really nice hook kicks and very different, interesting choreography going on. But like you say, maybe a bit over-edited in places. But that is kind of the saving grace, I think, those little action scenes. I didn't have so much of a problem with the kids and stuff. But yeah, it's an odd one because at times it feels like it is going for that full-on comedy kind of approach, like with the comic relief guy, who I really enjoyed. He was another highlight for me. I actually really liked him in this. And then I watched Undercover Brother 2 recently, and obviously spotted him in that again. And I thought he was quite good in that as well. Now, the problem, this and Undercover Brother 2 are both made by Universal 1440, you know, sequels to, you know, belated DTV sequels or reboots to earlier properties. Undercover Brother 2 was a massive bait and switch because Michael Jai White's, you know, on the front, you think, oh, we're going to get like a Black Dynamite 2 kind of thing. And no, he's in the opening scene and then he's like laid up in a coma or whatever. And occasionally appears in like visions to his brother, his younger brother, who's the main lead in the film. So that was hugely disappointing. Although I actually didn't mind the film. I thought it was quite amusing. In this one, it's a Michael Jai White movie, properly starring Michael Jai White. So that was also quite refreshing. Didn't really like the villains and stuff. But yeah, it's 71 minutes long. It's probably about the same length as Universal Soldier: The Return that he was in. So that it's brisk, but yeah, it could have been a lot better, but it could have been a lot worse as well.
So from you three guys, basically what I'm hearing is, you know, if you were to describe this to someone who hasn't seen it yet, you'd be like, well, it's short. Basically, yeah. is where you guys are coming from. I'm sort of on the fence, actually. I did kind of enjoy it. I mean, it is flawed. I thought the fight in the locker room, I mean, you mentioned how static the camera was, and I agree with you, but the actual choreography I thought was quite good.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to murder his name, Maurice
Crump. Yeah. It was good that he was in it.
Yeah, he was really good in that scene. The two kids, I actually thought that Nakai Takawira, who played the daughter, I thought she was actually really good. I liked her sort of sassy attitude.
It was very, it made the film feel very much like it was a Disney, Nickelodeon kind of thing.
Yeah, Mary-Kate and Olsen, or whatever it was.
Yeah, Mary-Kate and Ashley Do Die Hard.
When you mentioned the sitcom quality, that was the first thing that popped in my head, was like a Disney movie. You know, like when my siblings were younger growing up in Disney, they'd have the Disney original movies, or, you know, I babysit my nephew. It felt like that kind of a pacing and vibe to it. And that was, that was, you know, when you mentioned TV quality, that was the first thing that popped into my head.
So the bad guys you mentioned, I thought, you know, this guy Alpha, he sort of turns up and he's got a grudge against the owner of the team because she did sort of headlined a committee for the CIA, which got him fired and all the rest of it, and he's like, I'm gonna show I'm not an absolute psychopath, and she was wrong in the first place, I'm gonna blow up everyone in this stadium. You know, it's like okay.
And they set up those bombs, which then Michael Jai White goes around getting really, really quickly in a like comedy montage.
Yeah, it is. Okay. So here's something we haven't mentioned. There's a couple of things we haven't mentioned yet. The soundtrack. The soundtrack. Every time there's a fight breaks out, apart from the one that's in the changing rooms, every other fight is accompanied by a hip hop soundtrack.
Yeah, that's quite a common trope, I think.
I don't think it is. I really don't think it is that common.
Didn't they do the same thing in like Cradle to the Grave, you know, stuff like that?
Oh, but that was just like Warner Brothers trying too hard, you know. That's them trying to be hip. It's like like in Romeo is Bleeding
Romeo Must Die.
Like Romeo Must Die when Jet Li has I know hip hop, you know. It's like fuck off. No. That's just them trying too hard, basically. But this, no, I mean, I can't think of many. And unless they're actually sort of trying to get into that, you know, okay, films with like DMX in perhaps, but I don't know. It just seemed really weird. It's like every time there's a fight scene, and suddenly we've got this sort of rap soundtrack. This hip-hop.
I think they were trying to possibly compensate for some of the other, you know, shortcomings in terms of the visuals and, you know, that. So they, you know, put in a, you know, pumping song or whatever to get people, you know, try and get people more excited than because they haven't got really the resources to build up any tension and and stuff.
Another aspect of this.
You haven't got a giant penguin in this. You know, somebody dressed as a giant penguin.
Well, I was kind of waiting for that. I was waiting for Michael J. White to suddenly put on the mascot costume or something and do a giant sort of jumping sort of thing, pointer or something, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, like you say, it's so, to me, it's so much based, the tone is wrong. It's too much of a comedy. It really is. And I just think it takes away from it. It shouldn't be like, anyone?
The whole thing with as you say, with Alpha, you know, his whole attitude is just like too cocky by half. It's like, and not professional at all. You know, it's just like, oh. The other thing as well with this is, you know, one of the big flaws sort of is that they make a big show of making their weapons when they arrive at the arena using these 3D printers. I'm thinking, yeah, that's really cool idea, actually. You know, all you do is smuggle the ammo in. Or I think even the ammo was like, you know, because you could only use it at short range or something, so maybe they made the ammo as well. But then, you know, spoiler, guys, you find out that the head of security is in on it. And you think, well, surely you could have arranged for this stuff to just be, you know, to bring in some weapons on the sly. You're the head of fucking security. Anyway, you know.
Did you catch the end credit scene as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Half dozen of the dumbest cops in that town walk into the changing rooms and like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay, so a slight setup. And to be fair, you know, the best bad guy should get away with it. You know, should be saved for another day, basically. So
that's the thing. Going back to the talking about the tone and everything, you know, and the being shot like a sitcom and being a bit funny, there are times when it's really, really, you know, intensely, not in terms of how graphic it's shown or whatever, but there's a lot of violence. You know, there's that first terrorist guy going around killing all the guards. Mm. You know, there's no mercy there. They're not taking hostages. No. They're like literally, they're like taking them out.
Well, it's like when,
with
when
extreme prejudice.
It's like when his daughter walks into the toilets, you know, and she sees these guys just basically murdering people right in front of her. It's like, okay, that's going to sort of wake her up at 3 o'clock in the morning a few times.
Anyway. Yeah, it is a weird tone. Another shout out to a lady we're going to be talking about in a minute.
Mrs.
Guy White, Gillian White, who also has a nice little fight scene.
She handles herself quite well. I thought she did pretty well in this, actually. It's a shame that, you know, she didn't get more to do.
But no, it is kind of a nothing role, but that's more than compensating.
But it's a good introduction. It's a very good introduction.
Yeah, I'd never seen her before. I wasn't, you know, familiar. I'd never, you know, I knew his work, but I didn't know, you know, his wife or what she, you know, what she was capable of or anything. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Indeed.
Yeah, I think was on his Twitter account. I think he has a YouTube page, and he actually does like self-defense classes for women where he uses his wife, and he's like the punching dummy, and she you know, uses the techniques to hit him, because I've seen them on his Twitter before. I think there is a movie too that she's done recently with him where she's kind of has a bigger part than this, but yeah, you can almost kind of see the chemistry there when they do their fight scene, that I think she kind of was used to punching, you know, knowing how to hit him, so it didn't hurt him or whatever because of those videos that they had done before. I didn't know it was his wife initially, and then I found out after. But I think if he has a YouTube page.
He does. Yeah, they've done quite a lot of videos together. And the film you're talking about is the one that you haven't seen. We're going to review after this one. So yeah, that's a nice little setup there. Is it me or should the patrons in the were there too many patrons walking around, you know, because they weren't speaking very cautiously. Hmm. They're kind of walking around going, yeah, I'm going to go over and defuse that bomb over there. And then driving around in the car and Gus, the comic relief guy, is going, get out of the way. Get out of the way. We're trying to save your lives.
Yeah. In America, for those kind of sporting events, I think what would have made it seem a little bit more realistic if these people had been like on their phones, like doing selfies, because everybody wants to show off. Oh, I'm at the game. You know, aren't you jealous of me or whatever? That probably would have been more realistic there. The other thing too, I haven't been to an event like in an arena in the U.S. in a while. I usually go to more like baseball games, which are outdoors. But yeah, it would have been nice maybe to have lines. Like they could have, you know, if they're kind of playing off of some of those things, to like he's driving the truck through and there's a whole line of people waiting to get food or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just meandering around.
Yes, it's kind of like the video game, like Grand Theft Auto or something like that, where the people are just kind of there, just kind of, they didn't know what to do with them. And so they're just kind of hanging around.
Yeah. So that sort of brings me to another feature that's in the original that's missing from this, is the police gathering outside. So they've taken that whole element away, where it's literally all just taking place inside. Nobody outside has got any clue what's going on. So in the previous version, Powers Booth was like setting off explosions in the car park and stuff, wasn't he? There was all the big...
Yeah.
See, that's the beauty of technology sort of moving forward, Rich, you know, because now they can actually sort of blanket all the phones and everything, you know, just have a blackout outside of the thing. You know, that in movie land, we can do that now. That's the art of the possible.
Yeah.
So anyway, Matt, we score our films out of 10. So I'm going to give you first dibs on this one. How are you going to score Welcome to Sudden Death?
I feel it sounds harsh to say this, but I think like 4 out of 10, because I feel like anything more than 5 and saying it's better than halfway, I think 4 might be, maybe that's generous, but that's what I'll go 4 for that one.
Wow. Okay. Steve?
I'll go 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rich?
I feel like being a bit more generous. I feel it's very watchable, and I felt it gave me enough that I wasn't disappointed. You know, I kind of went in with reasonably low expectations anyway, but I didn't feel particularly disappointed. I thought Michael Jai White was very charismatic, although Sean Malloy from the I Must Break This podcast said he felt there was a complete lack of urgency in Jesse's. Jesse's trying to save his kids kind of, and the situation that he was in, which I do kind of agree with as well. Mm. I thought, despite the fact that it had that shot like a sitcom approach, which in a weird way makes it quite interesting, because I don't recall seeing an action film made like this before, I'm going to go 7.
Wow. Okay. And I'm going to go 6. I did enjoy this, but there is a lot to be desired, I think, going into this one. The hip hop soundtrack just grated. This is me being old and white, I know. But
not Michael Jai White.
No. I thought there was a lot to enjoy, but at the same time, there's a lot which I wish could be improved.
If you want to watch Sudden Death again, watch Final Score, is what we're saying.
Yeah, Final Score is much better. Absolutely. And it's got a kitchen fight. So there you go.
Oh, another thing that's interesting is Gene Quintana, who wrote the original screenplay, came back for this one. So he gets he co-wrote the screenplay with the guy who directed this, Dallas Jackson. So I can't help but feel that maybe he wrote more of a traditional reworking, and then Dallas Jackson came in and added all the kid stuff and, you know, the sort of Disney movie kind of qualities to it. I don't know. I think maybe the film was being pulled in two different directions, you know?
That's interesting. So you mentioned the director there before we wrap up. I mean, I'm just quickly going into IMDb. He's only got one other credit, a film called Thriller from 2018.
Yeah, I think that's on Netflix.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Okay.
I think I've got it on my watch list because I was quite curious about it.
I must admit, I will probably check that out as well. But anyway, so welcome to Sudden Death. Matt's given it a 4. Steve's given it a 5.
Yep.
I'm giving it a 6, and Richard's given it a 7. So definitely mileage may vary on this one, guys. Check it out. Our next review is Take Back. Local lawyer Zara is living an idyllic life, running a successful practice, married to a school teacher, David, and bonding with her stepdaughter. However, this is all threatened when she intervenes in a violent confrontation and video footage of the situation goes viral. It brings her back to the attention of someone buried deep in her past, someone she thought she had killed. Dun, dun, dun. So, as we sort of hinted at in earlier review, this one stars Gillian White, wife of Michael Jai. And Michael Jai White takes more of a sort of supporting character in this one, playing her husband, David, who's a school teacher. And I think he does a really good job of playing the sort of worried milquetoast kind of guy. You know, he's not a man of action, or at least not to begin with. I think he does really well in this, you know, in that sort of role. Let's go to Steve.
I thought this was great. This was so much better than Welcome to Sudden Death. Gillian White was absolutely phenomenal. She was such a badass in this. But the pathos that she gave to the character as well was really good. Michael J. White, as you said, he takes a step back on this one. He's more, you know, your loving dad in the background. I mean, she's there. She's already killed 4 people halfway through. And he's like, you know, he's like, okay.
Still not asking any questions. Yeah.
No. But I did like her backstory and what it was about. I mean, it obviously it kind of reminded me of something like, you know, a history of violence, in that kind of style, or in that kind of way, should I say. I think the only thing I didn't really like was Mickey Rourke, his performance. I thought it was just over the top, and it didn't really do anything. It didn't add anything to it.
I don't think it's over the top. I think it's under the top, isn't it?
No, I mean, when he's like shouting his dogs, it was just weird, you know.
Well, that's the indulgence of them hiring, saying, Mickey, can you come and do this movie? And he's like, well, yeah, as long as I get to play with my dogs.
No, yeah, probably.
He loves his little dogs so much, and there's long scenes of him playing with his dogs.
It's always something with animals. I don't know if any of you've seen Blunt Force Trauma.
No.
No, I know you're always recommending it.
Recommend it. But he's in that, and he keeps playing. He's got this parrot, this sort of parakeet, sort of parrot, and he keeps playing with that, you know, while he's sort of delivering his lines. He always needs something to be playing with. It's like Brad Pitt with, you know, he always has an eating scene and bloody, you know, well, we all know Tom Cruise runs everywhere, but yeah, so, you know, it's all stuff like that. But Mickey Rourke is like, he needs something to be, and you know, I'm jumping ahead of it. How many times did he take off and put on his sunglasses in this film?
Oh my God.
Absolutely ridiculous.
He does it 4 times in the last scene.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
Anyway. Matt, so I can just bring you in on this for a second. What's the last thing you remember seeing Mickey Rourke in?
So the last one for me was actually Skin Traffic.
That's what I was going to
mention. I looked at Blunt Force Trauma, what you're talking about. I'm going to get that. It's available on Prime. I've got to see that one now.
It's brilliant. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
It's got Frida Pinto from Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's one of the, because I think because of the title, everyone sort of gives it a wide berth, you know, but no, it's a stonking film that is.
Yeah, so Mickey Rourke in this is more active than he was in Skin Traffic, also known over here as Hitman in London. because I think in that film he basically just sat on a sofa, if I recall correctly.
Is he in Traffic, the one by Aya?
Yeah, Arapai Aya, yeah.
With Gary Daniels.
That's the one, yeah. So loads of interesting people not doing much in that film. but so Mickey Rourke in this one gets to be the villain, but as you say, he doesn't really do a lot. He's quite laid back for the most. There's a big burly guy with a beard who sort of does most of the heave-ho.
You don't need Mickey Rourke, you just need him. To me, I would just sack Mickey Rourke off and concentrate on him. Because I think he's a bit of he's an absolute bastard in it, and I think he plays it really well.
There's a moment towards the end of the film where something happens to Mickey Rourke, but you don't see it. And I'm wondering, is that a case of he wouldn't let them do it? Because it's a really odd... Do you know what I'm getting at? There's a key moment. And I think that they've kind of worked around it because it's really odd the way it happens. Anyway, just to throw my two penneth in, I'm going to reinforce, say, Gillian White's excellent. She's a fantastic lead. Mm-hmm. It really bugged the hell out of me that in the credits she is and.
Yes, yes, she's like fourth in line.
Yeah, credits wind me up. We have films where Michael Jai White gets top credited, but he's actually an and, like Never Back Down 2, for example. Really good film, really great film. I watched it recently, and he directed that as well, did a really great job. Mm-hmm. He gets top credited. He's not actually in it that much. He should have had an and credit. And the opposite is true here. Michael Jai White and Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke should have got the and credit, but he gets top billing. Anyway, it's all to do with contracts and stuff, isn't it? I know, I understand. Mm-hmm. But so she's really good. It's not as much of an action movie as I thought it might be. It's definitely a thriller with punctuated moments of action. This isn't Taken, although the plot is, you know, it's that kind of... The daughter gets kidnapped, they got to try and get her back kind of thing, but there's a lot more going on to it. But yeah, so I thought there was going to be a bit more action than there was, especially as there's a couple of really, really cool moments early on, like the scene where she takes out the guy in the bank at the beginning.
Coffee shop.
And she like locks the guy's gun out of his hand and stuff, and that was all really good. And I've watched a couple of videos. Matt was saying about her and her husband doing these training videos and stuff, and that's how the film starts, is her being taught to fight because he's like a coach at the school and stuff. And shifting to Michael Jai White, he is kind of the background. Michael Jai White has always done these action roles, but then also the non-action roles. He's quite varied, and he turns up in all sorts of different things. And in this one, I think he put a bit of weight on. He looks like he's really gone. He's not being the same, you know, cut guy.
Yeah.
For this role, because it wouldn't fit. So he's you know, he's an older guy. He's not a professional fighter, although he does teach it. So I thought that was quite interesting that he's gone that approach. But at certain points in the story, he does get involved and he does do some kicking, and you know, he gets in on the action, and they do kind of a team up thing towards the end, which I liked. So that all worked really well. I thought their relationship worked really well. I mean, they're brilliant actors. They're so good. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're married, you know, that gives them an ease. But yeah, I thought they were really impressive. We've also got James Russo in there, in the sort of the investigators trying to figure out what's going on part of the story. I thought he was all right. I didn't mind him and the other guy who I don't know. But there's a lot going on here. I think it's really good. But the thing I want to highlight most is how beautiful it looks. The cinematography is great.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's proper widescreen. Could be, you know, it looks like it could have been in a cinema. It's a really good job. It was made by Christian Sesma, who previously did Pay Dirt.
Luke Goss.
And Val Kilmer. Yeah. So he did. Yeah. He got Val Kilmer in as a like marketable name, and he's kind of done the same thing here with Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
But in Pay Dirt, I think, I don't know, did Val Kilmer do a bit more? I don't know.
Yeah, he was a sort of ex sheriff or something.
Yeah, he was. He was the.
Yeah.
So and he's also done. Christian Cessna, he's done loads. AWOL 72, The Night Crew, Vigilante Diaries, a whole bunch of stuff. I think this, I haven't seen many of his films, but I think this is a lot better than Pay Dirt. I like Pay Dirt, but I think this feels like a much more polished movie.
Yeah. Of his previous ones, I recommend The Night Crew. It's another Matt Goss one, but I quite enjoyed that one. But this was stonking. Yeah, this was really good. Mm. I thought, Gillian White is a bona fide action star. We had a lovely little, prologue in Welcome to Sudden Death, but this is, she gets to do the real deal here. The acting was really good, as I said. So Michael J. White, it's really interesting. Sort of the sort of gender reversal of their roles. Usually it'd be the other way. If you think of A History of Violence, for example. She's in the Viggo Mortensen role, and he's the woman sort of going, "You're not the person I married," and all the rest, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. And in that particular scene, he was really good. When he sort of breaks down, he's like, "Can't believe what I'm hearing," sort of thing. He really does sell that really well. But action-wise, thought it was solid. Not much to fault it. The only thing I do have an issue with, it's not really an issue, it's not as if I want to see more of it, but there's two scenes, and they're identical scenes. I think they just repeated the same footage where they're sort of abusing the girls, where he's got like a stick or something, and it's just totally unclear what is actually happening.
Yeah, and can I just mention, in terms of that footage, not that particular footage, but the trafficked girls, did you feel that some of that felt a little bit exploitative in terms of the way it was shot? I thought they were a bit showing them off a bit too much, let's say,
bit of the male gaze kind of thing.
Yeah, because they were all like in bra and knickers, weren't they? Short shorts.
Yeah, but
they're trapped in the middle of the desert.
But I think they've been abducted from things like nightclubs and stuff, haven't they?
The girl
we see at the beginning, they're going to be wearing revealing clothes. It's not as if they're going to sort of change their clothes or anything.
But kind of what I'm saying is that kind of the film has orchestrated that. It's orchestrated the idea of them being kept. It could be kept in a different kind of environment and stuff. But I just felt that was in a film that has such a sort of a feminist kind of bent. It is a film directed by a man, and so therefore there is that. I don't know if that's the reason why it does. Some of the stuff maybe feels a bit inappropriate compared to the tone of the rest of the film, because they do dwell on the sort of trauma of what Gillian White's character has experienced in the past and stuff, and you get a kind of. You get these little hints and stuff, but that's my only sort of quibble, I'd say, on that front.
Cool. Ready to score? Okay, Rich?
8, definitely an 8.
Yeah. And Steve?
Yeah, definitely an 8.
Awesome. I'm going to drop down to a 7, but I still thought this was very good. Those two scenes, partly because of the repetition and partly because I'm thinking, what are you trying to show us here? What's actually going on, apart from a load of girls screaming? But other than that, 2 8s and a 7 are a very strong turnout for Take Back. Our short shot this week is 3 Bullets. A man of mystery enters a gambling den intent on misbehaving, but he's only got 3 remaining bullets in his guns. So this is directed by Ron Yuan, brother of Roger, who also turned up in the film we're going to be reviewing later on in our DTV throwback. This was stonking. I absolutely love this, especially since it starts with Bakeem Woodbine and Ron Wan having this sort of very sort of Pulp Fiction style sort of meta conversation. before you even got a clue what the actual sort of film's going to be. You know, you're already sort of drawn into these two characters. So I was on board. And for me, what this kind of felt like is if John Woo sort of turned up to set one day for a big sort of orchestrated sort of gunfight, and then someone turned around to him and goes, "No, sorry, mate, you've only got 3 bullets to play with. So off you go." I thought this was great. So Matt, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the opening part, I think for me, you know, sometimes that Pulp Fiction thing can be like a bit much, where it's like, oh, the hitmen are having a cutesy conversation. But it's like, boy, once this thing kicks into high gear, it's just, it's absolutely amazing. It's just really great. Like you said, it's almost like how like a John Woo feel. I also had this feeling too of it's like, these are guys that do action. You know, I mean, we have Michael Jai White, Bokeem Woodbine, Ron Yuan, James Liu also in it. And it's almost like this is the movie that they would make if they had the ability to really make a movie, right? If they had no budgetary restrictions, if they had the complete creative freedom to do everything. And who knows if you could maintain this level of like, you know, this 8 minutes for an 80 minute film. You know, maybe you can't, maybe we get more of the earlier part there, which I think kind of agree with you about the Pulp Fiction part. I don't think it was so bad, like, cause it was short, like, you know, it's only a minute or two, and what it leads us to, I thought was really kind of a cool setup, the way they did that. But, yeah, you know, maybe a long movie, maybe we get more of that. And maybe 8 minutes is just perfect for what we needed here. But it just felt like, you know, I love the you know, how many times do you see a hero in a situation where he has to fight his way out of it? And things happen where it's like, almost like the bad guys either do things that are dumb or they do something to let the hero off the hook. And here, you know, Michael Jai White's got 3 bullets in this room full of people and he has to figure out how to make his bullets count. And they did a really great job with that, I thought. So yeah, for me, this was really good.
Rich, over to you.
I didn't like it as much as you guys. I like, you know, the action, the choreography is good. I just thought the way it was shot and the sort of the music and that, the, you know, the sort of artiness that they were going, that he was going for with it, didn't work for me. I'm very interested to see anything that Ron Yuan does, because he's one of the mainstays of the whole DTV action thing. You know, going back to, you know, he's done films with everyone, you know, in various capacities, whether that's, you know, an actor or a stunt guy or you know, choreography, and I don't know if he's done much choreography, but definitely, you know, in terms of setting things up. I mean, he'd only directed one short film before this, I think, or around the same time, called Tea and Remembrance, which had a similarly arty style to it, which I wasn't keen on. But he's gone on recently to do what was originally called Step Up China. I think it's also called Step Up Year of the Dragon. It's like the sixth film in the Step Up series, and would like a made specifically to appeal to the Chinese market and that. So he's become, and he's now going to do a sequel to 47 Ronin. So he's really taking off now. You know, about time, really. You know, because he's been around so long. I don't think the Pulp Fiction-y, you know, Tarantino part of it at the start really fitted. You know, it wasn't necessary. You could take that out and it wouldn't change anything, I felt. It moves from one thing to another thing. The setup, the story, which Michael Jai White came up with, where he plays this character, the man who has to take out these guys. Everything he's doing is really good, I felt. And I loved seeing James Liu as the villain as well. So it's really, you know, it's a really well cast film. So it's just the aesthetic of it, you know, didn't gel with me, unfortunately.
Oh dear. Okay, Steve, what did you make of this?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I too like the introduction, like the first scene when it was a bit Pulp Fiction for me, but yeah, no, I thought it worked quite well. And then after that, it just does what it says on the tin and just turns to mayhem. But I thought it was really good. Well shot. I thought the choreography was great. The way he's using, you know, when he goes and looks through the window, he's got all the guns laid out and he's noticing which guns are where and blah, blah, blah. And then he gets to the end of it and he's got, you know, no bullets left. And Harry actually takes out the boss. That was really good. Oh, right, I really enjoyed it.
Did you like it where he caught the clip in midair and he's gone?
Oh, yeah.
That was properly woo. That was.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, the other sort of big John Woo moment is where he spots somebody by looking through somebody else's sunglasses. He gets the reflection off them and sort of sees the guy behind him, which is a motif of John Woo's. You know, you see it in things like Hard Target and Hard Boiled and all the rest of it. So, yeah, really, really cool. I disagree with you, Rich, as far as the aesthetics concerned. I thought this worked really well. I'm sorry
to disagree with myself. Maybe I need to give it another watch.
I do agree with Matt that if this was a longer, you know, if this was a feature length, the likelihood is we're going to get more of those sort of pulp fiction-y sort of asides. I'd like that scene because, you know, it was that sort of bait and switch as to how the story was going to play out, you know, not knowing anything about the story going into it and thinking it's going to be about these two sort of weird assassin guys, especially when they sort of open the trunk of the car and it's like, right, okay, we know where this is going. And then, no, we don't. It's something completely different. So, yeah, brilliant. Really, really well done. And, seeing, you know, the names involved in it, gave it a real pedigree. So we don't score the shorts, but we will put a link in the footnotes. So go check it out. This is 8 minutes long, you know, hardly a blip in your lunch hour. Our DTV throwback this week is Blood and Bone. Fresh out of prison, a man only known as Bone gets involved in an underground fighting circuit. Working with a guy called Pinball, he decimates the local competition until he catches the eye of James, a local crime boss who has ambitions to gain entry into an even bigger, even more lucrative organization, and sees Bone as his way in. I was first introduced to this film after reading Outlaw Verne's webpage, that sounds awful, his website, and he was mentioning this film and I'd never heard of it, and I sort of said, and everyone sort of piled in going, dude, you got to check out this film. So I just ordered it blind, you know, didn't check any trailers out, thought sod it, and absolutely blown away by this film, as I'm sure you guys were. Steve, had you seen Blood and Bone before?
No, I hadn't actually. Absolutely cracking, really good. Thought the fights were brilliant. What astounded me about it is it from 2009? So you've got,
yeah, I think yeah. So
you're talking about 12 years ago. Now, when you look at Michael Jai White, he's a brick shithouse. He's absolutely huge, but the fighting in this is so quick and nimble. And I really didn't expect that, you know, because you've got like, what's it called at the beginning?
Kimbo Slice,
yeah. And he's just a beast. He's just, you know, it's all strength and power. And the way he fights, and it's incredible. I was really, really impressed with him in this one. The way it's shot, everything like that. The one thing, a couple of things I weren't too impressed with, it takes a while to get to the nitty-gritty of the story, if you know what I mean.
Do you mean the revelation of his motivation?
Yeah, because that comes in like three quarters of the way through, so you're like, right, okay, fair enough, I get it now. And also, is it Pinball?
Yeah,
I couldn't stand him. I just wanted Bones to turn around and absolutely twat him and just knock him out, because he was so annoying. I thought James, is it Eamon Walker who played James?
Yes, yeah.
I thought he was great. Absolutely petrifying, that bloke. You wouldn't mess with him in the dark alley.
I think he's British, isn't he, as well?
He is, he's a Londoner.
I believe he is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Gillian Sands as well turned up for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
As well. Which I've not seen him in anything for a long while, to be fair.
True, yeah. You're more likely to see Bruce Payne than you are with Julian Sands these days.
Yeah.
Now,
Yeah. Absolutely classic. Yeah. Really enjoyed it.
Now, Matt, I'm assuming you are very familiar with this film.
Yeah, so in the end of the 2000s, I did my top 10 DTV films of the aughts, or the 2000s, or however you want to call it. And this came in at number 9. So this was for that decade of DTV. Now, of course, the 2000s, the first decade of the 2000s is not as strong a decade as like the 90s or the 80s necessarily, but that was how much I liked this one, I think. Now, granted, the pinball complaint, I definitely, what was it, Dante Basco, I think is the actor?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, hearing him say like knuckle up or whatever when they're getting ready to fight, like I could have done without that too. I think he was, you know, that was, that was a bit much. And I think Michael Jai White played a similar character in another PM film where all he did was just say it's time to fight or whatever. He was like the guy that started the fight. So it's interesting to see that happen. But yeah, I mean, Eamon Walker, I really loved his baddie in this. There's a scene where they're at dinner, like they're going to kill somebody and they're at dinner and somebody, the woman starts playing Wang, Dance Hall Days, I think, right?
Yeah, by Wang Chung. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And Eamon Walker's like, what? You know, the brothers don't like Wang Chung, you know? And he's like singing along to it and then boom, just kills that person there. And maybe the film we watched, we talked about earlier, Welcome to Sudden Death, could maybe learn from how to do humor in a dark, you know, kind of film, because it fit with the film better, as opposed to that where it's like, oh, we're doing this goofy stuff, but yet we just killed 5 security guards, you know, like how do we, you know, who are just doing their job, you know, they you know, so I like that. But you know, Michael Jai White, I think for me, you know, this was right before I'd seen Black Dynamite, so I think Black Diamond hadn't come out here in the U.S. or at least where I lived for like another few months. So I knew Michael Jai White. And sometimes I have to remind myself how much I really liked him in this, because then Black Dynamite comes out and I'm like, oh, this is it. Cause that was just such a spectacular film. But
yeah,
I mean, the size and athleticism that Michael Jai White brings, this film maybe more than any, maybe like Triple Threat. I mean, there's a few that I can think of off the top of my head, other than this one, that really display just what Michael Jai White brings to the table. It's amazing. Like you said, Stephen, where it's like, how can someone this big be this nimble? It's amazing.
Rich.
Yeah, well, I mean, 2009, what an incredible year for Michael Jai White with this and Black Dynamite. You know, two films that would probably define his career more than many others. I mean, more than Spawn, more than Universal Soldier, The Return, or Exit Wounds, or anything like that, because these are solid showcases for what he's capable of, you know, in terms of serious drama and comedy, as well, and combining that with, as you say, his fantastic athleticism. I mean, the fights in this are incredibly well shot. I mean, it's not just him, but it's the whole fantastic stunt team, you know, the stuntmen, and I think like pretty much everyone you could think of is, you know, I think Chad Stahelski's involved and stuff on this, you know, a lot of key players make him, you know, work with him to make him look amazing. I mean, there's that one take bit where the camera stays still, similar to what it does in Welcome to Sudden Death. The camera just doesn't move, and he's just taking out all those guys, like kicking them left. I mean, a guy jumps up to him, and at one point, you know, he kicks up his leg and, you know, just stops him in midair. It's just, you know, pushes him away. There's so much power in what he's doing. It's just awesome. This is definitely one of his best. I mean, Kimbo Slice is really good in that, you know, enormous threatening, you know, character who gets taken out far too early, in my view. But it kind of, you know, the ante has to get upped, because we're first introduced to Bone with another very impressive action sequence right at the beginning, where he takes out a whole bunch of guys who were clearly not ready to go up against him. He's kind of like a Steven Seagal kind of character, in that you just like, well, surely no one can touch this guy. there's no one who can even come near. So therefore they have to try and build up the threat and whatever. And ultimately we get to like Matt Mullins and stuff. But that's all really good. The fight scenes are excellent. You know, the whole underground fight circuit stuff works really well. The establishing, you know, coming into this home and establishing a relationship with the nanny character and sort of the family unit kind of thing that he establishes is all really well, nicely done. Eamon Walker is amazing. I don't think any British actor does a better American accent than he. I mean, he's so convincing. So, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about you, Matt, but the, you know, most of the time you watch, you know, like Scott Adkins or something, they're generally, you know, given away, you know, that it's not authentic. But I think Eamon Walker's worked really hard on it. I mean, he's been playing, I was looking at his IMDb, he's been playing a character called Wallace Bowden on a Chicago
franchise. Chicago PD. Yeah.
Chicago Justice, Chicago Med, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire. He's appeared on all these shows. So he's been playing this character for a really long time. But this predates that. This is quite a long way. But he went to America in like 1996. Mm. And he's just worked really, really incredibly hard on trying to nail the accent. And I think he's done amazing. And he's also got, he's a great villain, you know, and he's got the sword and stuff and the very stylish suits. And that, so he's a great asset to the film. You know, he's a brilliant villain. And you know, a lot of the other members of the cast are really good. I mean, Julian Sands essentially is the man. who gives a racist speech. You know, because kind of, there is a blaxploitation kind of element, kind of feel to this, although it's very modern. You know, like Black Dynamite, it's definitely hearkening back to that kind, to the, you know, to Jim Brown and Richard Roundtree and all that kind of stuff, but the Jim Kelly, obviously. I guess they had to kind of incorporate that into it to you know, to the evil racist character. But he's good. I like Julian Sands when he pops up in that role. You feel like they're going to do more with him, but they don't. It kind of just vanishes. Oh, and I don't know if you noticed in that climactic scene, there's a whole bunch of cameos by like martial greats from martial arts history. Sorry,
you got Robert Wall, Bob Wall.
Yep. Bob Wall, yeah,
he gets a good shout out. Yeah, O'Hara. I thought it was a brilliant moment.
And I think what's the guy? Judo Jean LaBelle, I think, is in there as well.
All right.
Oh, and also in the cast, Gina Carano.
Yes, while she was still fighting as well, while she was still an MMA fighter back then. So, yeah, I love this film. I remember I interviewed Scott Adkins, and he did sort of diss Michael J. White a little bit by saying that he never gets hit. You know, he's too invincible in his films. He needs to get slapped around a bit. And you do get a bit of that in here, but it's sort of incremental because, yeah, he enters this sort of fighting circuit and these guys aren't ready for him, you know, and he just wastes them very easily to begin with.
He's annihilating them.
Then he does get a fight which, you know, does last more than like two hits, basically, and, you know, he has to work for it a bit. And then you get the fight at the end with Matt Mullins, and It's a really interesting fight when you watch it, because it's basically two guys who are have a very similar skill set, and it's literally a case of whoever loses their composure first in that fight.
I'll be honest with you, in that fight, I was really impressed with the other guy, because you can see it when he loses it, you know, and it's not just the bravado. It's like, oh shit, hang on, this is not going my way here. Absolutely. And yeah, that I thought he did that really, really well, to be fair. Normally something like that, he's just, you know, I'll breathe a bit heavier, I'll look a bit damaged, but you can just see the colour and the shock just drain out of his face. He's like, oh, I'm fucked here now. You know.
You can see his punches have become a bit wilder, you know, he just loses it a bit. You know, if he'd managed to maintain his composure a bit, he may have had more of a chance. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, Bone is just as cool as ice all the way through that fight, you know, and he's always in control. But yeah, no, that is absolutely superb. I think we've sort of shouted out all the sort of main little bits and pieces to this. That bit with Julian Sands when he gives him the that racist speech, he's sort of saying, "Oh, we're entertained by you and all this sort of stuff. Your athletic ability entertains us." And then Eamon Walker comes back with that bit going, "Yeah, okay, but we got bigger dicks." You know, to paraphrase the conversation, I thought that was sort of quite amusing. This is a great little film. The fact that it's available on Amazon Prime gives no one listening to this an excuse not to watch it, basically. We thoroughly enjoyed it. We don't score the throwbacks, but we do recommend them very, very highly. So please go and check out Blood and Bone.
And if you need any more convincing, the second unit director is J.J. Perry. So if you've seen Undisputed 2, he also sorted the fights out on that with Scott Adkins and that. So this is a great companion piece. If you watch this and you've never seen Undisputed 2, you have to go and watch that next.
Yes, where have you been, Matt? Any final words from you on this?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, I don't think it's available in the U.S. on Prime, I'm seeing here. It looks like it is on Crackle, which is a free streaming site we have here in the States, which has a lot of commercials, so it can be a bit. But yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, you can rent it on Prime for $3. And I kind of think, you know, I mean, with so many things to stream, yes, it's probably good maybe to clean out your queues with everything in there. But this one might be worth the money, at least for a rental.
Absolutely, absolutely. So go check it out. And that is the end of this week's show. So thank you to our guest, Matt, for joining us. Matt, is there anything you'd like to plug before we wind up?
Yeah. So, I mean, the site is dtvconnoisseur.blogspot.com. That's where you can get links to everything. The podcast, I think it's iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, but it's the DTVC podcast. We usually run like maybe once a month, maybe twice a month in terms of episodes. And then my novel, Chad and Accounting, is available on Amazon and Kindle. If you're going to get that, probably better to look up Chad and Accounting than to try to figure out how to spell my last name to look me up by author in there. But yeah, those are the ones.
What sort of genre is Chad from Accounting?
So it's just a literary fiction one. I'm actually in the process of maybe trying to do maybe something more action oriented. This was just something I had worked on for a long time, and I figured, why don't I just self-publish it on Amazon and do it? But realizing that a lot of the audience that comes to my site are not really interested in literary fiction. They're probably more looking for something maybe more action oriented or something like that. So I'm kind of trying to work in that vein for a little bit to see if I can put something together.
Awesome. Okay. You can check out the short three bullets on the in the footnotes, and we'll have links to the trailers for all the other films we've covered tonight. Don't forget to check out our Short Shots podcast, our sister podcast, where me and Rich look exclusively at a bunch of shorts in each episode. Also check out our own Twitter and Facebook pages at the DTV Digest, where you'll find news about new films coming out and also the DTV charts. So thank you for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.